I'd sit down if I were you, but you can stand if you want to. I mean, it's a free country. This is the Episcopal Church. You can stand, sit, kneel, squat, get small, whatever works. So, and we have so many choices. We've talked a little bit about the choices we have in life, and of course, the choices we have in the other L word, which is important to watch, which is lectionary. The heck is that? I said lectionary to somebody the other day, and they said Gesundheit. I said, thank you. All right. Well, just in case you leave here, you go to Publix to get some food and stuff, and you're online, and somebody taps you on the shoulder and says, excuse me, I was just wondering, you look like an Episcopalian. What's a lectionary anyway? You'll know the answer now. The lectionary is the book that has all the readings in it that tells you what you're supposed to read. And the book that has all the readings in it that tells us about what we're supposed to read today gives us choices again. I hate that. Write one, write two. And depending upon the choice, you get a theme for the Sunday reading. So here at Good Shepherd, you have been exercising choice A. That's sort of like the egg foo young on the menu. Choice one from column A. And column A has us reading for weeks and weeks and weeks from which book of the Bible? Who remembers? No, there's no such book as Samuel. Second Samuel. How about, have you read Third Samuel? There is no Third Samuel. All right. Second Samuel. We've been following the adventures of who? David. And some weeks ago, we saw how it was that Samuel was sent by God to select the next king. Remember? And he looks and he sees all these guys come out, all these brothers. Their dad's name was what? Anybody remember? Jesse. Jesse. Who said Jesse? You did. Very good. Who? Oh, good. You don't have to stay after today. The rest of you do. All right. Very good. So, and Samuel looks, and these guys all come out. They got their varsity sweaters on. This guy got his varsity sweater here. He's a football player. Perfect king. Lord, what do you think of the guy with... He's a putz. Forget it. He goes down. We got the football. We got the soccer. We got the baseball. We got the swimming. We got the gymnastics. And we run out of sweaters. God doesn't like any of them. And they'd all like central casting king. And he says, wait a minute. Do you have any other sons? Oh, yeah, but you're not interested in this one. He's just a little guy about Father Bob's height. And he's out taking care of the sheep. Bring him. And who does it end up God chooses? Yeah. Right, he chooses David. All right? Anyway, so we go week after week now, and finally we come to this week. Remember? Last week, of course, we had the feast of St. Mel Brooks, and we heard that it's good to be the what? The king. All right. So, now if we hadn't had those readings, you'd hear today it's good to be the shepherd. Because actually... did you listen to the opening prayer? It talked about the shepherd stuff. That's because that particular prayer assumes that maybe we made the choice to do the reading from Jeremiah instead of Samuel. See, that's your alternate. Each week you do one of the prophets, and it links up with the gospel reading. Everybody got that written down? All right, so we're the friends of Samuel here. All right, but if we weren't doing Samuel and we were doing Jeremiah, instead of saying it's good to be the king, I'd say to you, let's all say it's good to be the shepherd. But we don't get to say that today. Instead, you ready for this? Well, listen carefully. Today, once again, we learned something about how not so good it can be to be the king. Right? King David, God's chosen, has come up with a brilliant idea. He wakes up one day and he says, what a nice house I have. Poor God is living like a homeless person out on the street. I think I'll build him a temple. And what does God say about that? Forget it. You're not building me anything. Your son will build me something. Anybody remember the name of the son who's going to build him something? Solomon. Solomon. I knew a Solomon. He had a deli in Brooklyn. Excellent food. Solomon is a good name. It's about somebody who is what? Wise. Someone who pays attention to God. And David was a great kid, but he wasn't as wise as he should have been, and he wasn't always paying attention. Got himself in a lot of trouble. He was messing around with other people's wives. He was a man after God's own heart, nonetheless. So David finds out this building the temple thing, it's not going to happen. Prophet Nathan explains it all to him, that God is going to choose his son to build the temple. And so, this temple is going to be in what city, by the way? Detroit. No, come on, starts with a J. Jerusalem. All right, the holy temple of Jerusalem. So, this is a little foretelling of something that's going to happen in the future, isn't it? This temple is going to be filled with the presence of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. This is no ordinary place. Filled with the presence of the God who led his people with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm out of slavery in Egypt into the freedom of the promised what? Land, the promised land. This temple, therefore, for God's people, is going to be considered the center of the universe, the place where heaven and earth meet. God's presence there would be unmistakable. Think about that. That's what the temple was meant to be. The unmistakable presence of God. Now jump a few centuries to Holy Week. And Jesus comes to this temple, this house of prayer for all of God's people, this place filled with the presence of God. And what does he find? It's been taken over by hucksters, bankers, stockbrokers, sellers of indulgence, used chariot dealers, health insurance agents, and other disreputable people. My house shall be called a house of prayer for all nations, and you have turned it into a den of thieves. See, that's what sets the dwelling place of God apart from all other places. We need our health insurance agents. We need used chariot salespeople. We need all of that stuff, but not in the temple. All we need there is to be filled with a sense of the presence of God. You see, the temple in Jerusalem must remain true to what it is. And therefore, filling it up with commercial enterprises is not an option. The only option for the temple, its prime purpose, is to be the outward and visible sign of the presence of the living God. That's it. Nothing else. Sadly, however, Solomon's temple was destroyed by the Babylonians. It was rebuilt following their return from exile. It was expanded under Herod the king. But then again, in 70 AD, the temple was destroyed by the Romans and it was never rebuilt again. The great vestige remaining of it is, anybody know what that is? It's where people go and they stick little prayers into the, what is that? The Temple Mount, that's right. And that would have been the end of the story. But of course it wasn't. I mean, if it had been, we wouldn't be here today. See, for us, That's just the beginning of a whole new chapter. We Christians believe that what we're about is not about the bad news regarding the destruction of a temple, but rather it's about the good news of its revival. For us, there is a new temple that has been built by God, a new and eternal dwelling place where God is not only present, but empowering. Where God's Spirit not only dwells upon an altar of sacrifice, but now is revealed on the altars of the daily lives of those who have been sealed and marked as Christ's own forever. And who might that be, by the way? Us. You get up in the morning, you look in the mirror, you should say to yourself, what a lovely temple. Because it's true. Matter of fact, the 21st chapter of God's revelation to John, God blesses us with this awesome account of what these new building plans look like. Listen to this carefully. I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, look, God's dwelling place is now among his people. He will dwell with them. They will be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God. God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death, mourning, crying, or pain. For the former things have passed away. And the one seated on the throne said, behold, I am making all things new. Yes, it's good to be the king. But if we've listened carefully these past few weeks, it's far better to be the temple. Yes, maybe St. Paul, not Mel Brooks, got it right when he wrote as he did to the church in Ephesus. Today's second reading. Listen again. You are no longer strangers and aliens. You are fellow servants with God's people. You belong to the household of God. You are built on the foundation of apostles and prophets with Jesus Christ himself as the cornerstone. The whole building is joined together in him and it grows up into a what? A temple dedicated to the Lord. Christ is building you into a dwelling place where God lives through the Spirit. It's good to be the temple. And maybe that's what Jesus knew. Of course he did. He knew that being the temple was challenging. It's going to be a difficult vocation for the people of God. And I suspect it was with nothing less in mind that he gives us an example in this morning's gospel reading. They've just had a successful preaching tour. They're about to go off and heal people left and right. And so what do they do after this great success and before another one? What do? Congratulate themselves. Gosh, this has been great. Form a committee. Get a new mission statement put together. No. They go off to a quiet place. Jesus was forever going off to quiet places, wasn't he? Before he begins his ministry, he goes out into the what? For 40 days and 40 nights. The desert. What do you think he did out there? He wasn't on the internet. He was out there praying, listening. His disciples come back from a great preaching tour. Wonderful. Let's go off to a quiet place. Tomorrow, I'm going to be crucified. Let's go off and pray in the garden. He was always going off someplace to be quiet. Stop doing all the talking. Start listening. We need quiet places. places where we can reflect prayerfully, have an opportunity to own up to failures, shortcomings, triumphs, successes, opinions, prejudices, put them aside. We might refer to that, what, as a kind of spiritual cleansing of the temple, getting rid of those things which maybe don't belong there in the first place. Because my temple is to be a place of prayer for all people, a dwelling place of God in the Spirit. And that can all get lost sometimes in all the busyness of the day, all of the triumphs, all of the great things we're so proud of sometimes. I believe that's why the liturgy of the church affords us with so many opportunities to observe holy silence. You know, take a look through the prayer book. It's an amazing book. Now, see, your book here is like the book in most Episcopal churches. It's got this gray line on it, okay? And that's called, this is what we're familiar with, and the rest of it, I've no idea what's in it. It's awfully big, and I'd get lost anyway. Actually, it's really simple, and it's really cool. Right in the heart of it is something called the daily office, morning prayer and evening prayer and noon prayer, and prayer for the early evening, and then, of course, Compline, which is just absolutely beautiful. And then for people who are too busy, there's even a short form of it called Daily Devotions for Individuals and Families. And it's really easy to find. I find most of the time, if you just look in front of the gray thing there, you find all the fun stuff. Very good. Great book. And then, of course, if you look through it carefully, where the gray stuff is, you'll find over and over again it says, here you may observe silence. Here we have all these readings, and you haven't had a moment yet, having heard them, to be quiet and ask yourself what they mean before I talk for 85 minutes. So much chatter all the time. The daily office has truly been a godsend for millions of Christians over all the centuries of the church's life. Today, you can even pray the daily office online. Matter of fact, I looked at the Good Shepherd website, and right on your homepage is a link to several versions of the daily office. So like if you're really busy, you pop your iPhone out and you go to the daily office and there it is. And what's really wonderful about that is you're never praying alone. You realize like if you were to do morning prayer every morning at 8 o'clock, there are probably, I don't know, maybe 50 to 100,000 people praying the same stuff with you right then and there. It's amazing. When I was a seminarian, I worked for a few months under the direction of a very successful, very holy priest, faithful pastor to his people. And this guy had led the parish, which was like just kind of dying and living off on its own, led this parish to become the center of the life of this community in New York City. It was amazing. They started a food pantry. Well, nobody had even heard of food pantries. They believed that they were there to serve the wider community, not themselves. So it's amazing. Like, they stopped worrying about money. And when they stopped doing that, they had more money coming in than they knew what to do with. I don't know how it happened, but it did. It reminds me a lot of when Jesus sent his disciples out for the first time. What did he tell them to take with them? Nothing. Don't take anything with you. So that's what they decided to do. And They became a place where immigrants could come and get some help with their immigration papers. They were a place where this place in New York, it was all Democrats. So the priest there, he let the Republicans meet in his basement, as long as they didn't tell anyone. Everybody was welcome there. It was amazing. So as a young seminarian, I went up to this guy and I said, "This is incredible. I mean, how do you do this? Like, what's the most important thing you've done to make all of this happen?" And I was expecting, of course, that he was going to give me this whole long list of all of the stuff that he was done. You know, a great guy. And instead he said, yes, the most important thing, yeah, we do each day. Let's see, it's morning prayer and evening prayer. I said, what? He says, yeah, I mean, he says, we couldn't presume to be doing any of these things in the name of God if we weren't starting the day with morning prayer and ending those efforts with evening prayer. He said, that's I think, what made it all happen. You know, I've noticed in a lot of parishes, those are the two things that never happen. They just don't. We're too busy. I tell you, that's the best advice I ever received. Morning prayer and evening prayer. And today, it once again reminds me that to be the temple of God, to be this dwelling place of God in the Spirit, to be the outward visible sign of God's presence and mercy for his people, God's charity and love, it must first and foremost mean that we are filled with the things of God. There's a really beautiful song about that, written long ago, late 3rd, early 4th century. It's called Ubi Caritas. It so tells the story of the church's life that Maundy Thursday, during the liturgy of the Mandatum, what does the word Mandatum mean, by the way? We get the word Maundy from that. What is that? Who knows? It means mandate, commandment. And what was that? What is the mandatum? It's the washing of feet. Or the shining of shoes, whatever you do here. The washing of feet. This is sung. It's very moving. And it's meant to tell us, look, this is why you're here. To be the servants of the servants of God. Don't sweat the other stuff. So there's this beautiful, beautiful song translated from the Latin with a very beautiful tune that was written to accompany it in the early 1970s. Now, I was going to bring my ukulele this morning, and I forgot it. And so, appropriately, a cappella, which, of course, is the way plain song was meant to be sung. So, I'd like you to listen carefully, and I'll try to sing this so that you hear the words. But if you know this, by all means, please join in. Okay? What does it mean to be the temple, the hands of God, his love in the world? Where charity and love prevail, there God is ever found. Brought here together by Christ's love, by love are we thus bound. With grateful joy and holy fear, his charity we learn. Let us with heart and mind and soul now love him in return. Forgive we now each other's faults, as we our faults confess. And let us love each other well, in Christian holiness. Let strife among us be unknown. Let all contention cease. Be his the glory that we seek. Be ours his holy peace. Let us recall that in our midst dwells God's begotten Son. As members of his body joined, we are in him made one. No race or creed can love exclude. If honored be God's name, our family embraces all, whose Father is the same.
It's good to be the temple, isn't it? Never forget who you are. Amen.